Good morning. I'm Don Meyer, President of the Port of Tacoma Commission. I'd like to call the special study session of the commission to order. It is Wednesday, August 22nd, 2018, and we're meeting at the Fabulous Center located here in Tacoma. Would you please join me in the flag salute? Stand for the flag salute, please.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. This is a study session. It's a special commission study session. And as I understand it, Carolyn, we can only talk about the Wheeler Osgood property because that's the way it was advertised. I mean, there may be other topics that some of us would like to talk about, but the reality is we're limited to that topic, are we not?
You're limited to final action, taking final action on anything. You're limited to what's posted on the agenda.
Okay, so the subject is, we're limited to the Wheeler Osgood subject is what I'm trying to, okay. And thank you to my fellow commissioners for making this time available. I think since I've been a commissioner, it's always been kind of a question in terms of where are we going? What are we doing? What are the priorities relative to these properties? And I know that really this work session came about as a result of some recommendations with regards to the property disposition. So I hope, Scott, as you go through this presentation, that we eventually can talk about at least three topics, one of which is property disposition, because I think we owe it to you relative to, are we leasing? Are we selling? What are we really doing? I think the uses, what are the priorities of uses? I had the privilege of actually taking a little tour of Urban Accessories. And I was really impressed in terms of their business activity. And so I think we also need to think about, as we go through our conversation, is sensitivity to existing tenants and the consequences of whatever our policy direction might be. So those are just a few items that I think we need to address. And hopefully, Scott, you can lead us through this conversation. Is that right, John?
You touched on the items I think that are most important, Commissioner, and so Scott's prepared to walk us through a presentation, and Rob is here from our environmental team, and there's been question about some of the environmental aspects of the Wheeler Osgood area, and so we've got Rob here as well then.
One thing I guess I should ask, I do have one person who has signed up for public comment. Would you like to make a public comment before we have our conversation, or would you like to make public comment before? Would you like to make a public comment now, Wendell? You didn't know you were signing up for public comment. Well, you did, Wendell, but you don't have to. Yeah. And I don't know if there's anybody else in the audience that would like to make some public comments, regardless of whether or not it was signed up here. Are there any? If you'd like to make comments, Wendell, we'd appreciate it, but you don't have to.
I'd just say a couple words.
Yeah, I think you need to go to that podium there and introduce yourself, Wendell, please.
Wendell Stroud, President of Marine Floats Corporation. We've been a tenant of the property for 30 years now.
Months to months, lease, right?
30 years in February. And our business, of course, is building floating docks and marinas and that type of marine construction. The Wheeler Osgood Waterway is a perfect fit for what we do. We're the only people in the business that can build a marina at our shop and tow it to the site, and in some cases have a complete marina rebuilt and installed in a week. And that's happened in a number of cases. And nobody else in the state can do that. And so it's between that and hopefully good other parts of our operation, we've moved to kind of the first place in the state as far as marina builders concerned, which used to be a company in Bellingham, and we've sort of taken their role away. But again, the location is just vital to how we operate, and we've looked around and looked around, and there's really no place else in Puget Sound that is equal to that. So we're vitally interested in how this property gets resolved, and certainly hope that we can play a part in that.
Thank you, Wendell. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that would like to make comments? If not, thank you very much. We'll, I guess, move on now, Scott, to your presentation.
Thank you. Good morning, Commissioners. As you mentioned, we're here to talk about the Wheeler-Osgood properties. These are very unique properties based on the fact that they border the Foss Waterway. They're viewed by the downtown district, and they are one of the largest remaining properties that we have that's undeveloped in the port's portfolio. So thank you for taking the time on this smoky Wednesday morning to discuss these properties. Here's an aerial view showing the Wheeler-Osgood properties. You can see the Wheeler-Osgood Waterway in the foreground and the Thea Foss Waterway in the background. For convenience, I'll reference the properties on either side of the Wheeler-Osgood as the North Wheeler-Osgood shown in the blue and the South Wheeler-Osgood shown in the green. So let's talk about the North Wheeler-Osgood area first. The North Wheeler-Osgood property is separated by a rail easement that is used by the BNSF. It's an active rail line. They come through there most every evening. And the port owns the property, but it does separate the parcel into 2 7-to-8-acre parcels. The property is vacant except for 1 month-to-month lease with Marine Floats. As Wendell mentioned, they've been there for 30 years. Their leased area is shown in the yellow. They have both uplands area, about 2 acres, and then they use the waterway, the submerged lands in the waterway. So as background, the port purchased this property in 2007 for a total price of $10,335,000. Total acreage is 17.26 acres. The property, as I mentioned, is currently vacant except for a lease with Marine Floats. That generates about $7,600 per month in rent revenues. The development community has shown considerable interest in this property. And upon commission approval, the staff is prepared to issue an RFP for the development of this property. One thing that we're hoping to do, and that was commission input early on, was to find an alternative location for Marine Floats. And you'll see later in the presentation that we think that the south side of the Wheeler-Osgood is an opportunity for that. So this slide, we've studied the site to evaluate development options. The site's very expensive to build upon because of unstable soils. Considering the cost of development and the location of the condition of the commercial market and the demographics of the commercial market, and also the S8 and M2 zoning area, multiple use type buildings have been identified as a good development option to complement the waterfront esplanade or boardwalk required by the S2 zoning and provide a nice aesthetic view from the west side of the Foss.
What that means is the soil can support those kind of buildings.
Yes, they're fairly low profile. If we went anything higher, it would require extensive pile work.
Because of the weight.
Yes.
Scott, just so I'm clear, what you have outlined here in terms of port ownership, is that S8 or is that split between S8 and M2?
It's S8 parallels the waterfront and then M2 is behind that.
So the stuff behind it, when you say behind it.
So if on this picture, if you look on the top half of it, that would be M2 zoning. So reality is that we could put a warehouse in there. We could split up the use of this parcel. We could have flexible use type buildings on the waterfront, and then we could have a warehouse type application above. So there's a lot of different options.
A warehouse would indicate more weight. So I suspect that in the S8 you have the soil issue, but in the M2 area you don't have the soil weight issue.
Because it's further away from the water, so the requirements are less. Also, we had engineers look at that, and I'm not sure that that's the case, that there is more weight with a warehouse application. They both have about a 40-foot height, and they're both more of a floating foundation. So they've said that a warehouse application on the non-water front side of the property would work well.
So the major issue about the transportation is transportation and the need for a transportation plan in this area, correct?
Correct. And we did.
Are we going to address that later?
I'm not going to get into that. Hoping to get some insight and view from the commission on what your vision is for this property. But we have looked at the site, and as far as having a warehouse or, as I've called it, the multiple-use type building, we have looked at the traffic plan. We haven't done a formal plan, but we've looked at the traffic issues through a consultant and the parking requirements to meet the zoning, and those would be allowed and presumed to work on this property.
The streets down there are bad on a good day.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be just the parking. It's the in and out of the...
It's the in and out.
You know, trucks that would be used in the warehouse.
It's how they connect to 11th Street, how they connect to D Street.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have a good game plan for that...
And how you connect to 21st Street.
Yeah, it's the whole region. It's that whole area.
And you have super value in that neighborhood, and they've been there for quite some time.
Well, and you also recently have that huge warehouse development on private land in the same general area.
Yes.
About 1.1 million square feet that will be occupied soon.
Bill Simpson.
Yes. So this slide, this is a local example of a multiple-use type building. The benefit of this type building, it affords very efficient construction. We have flexible design that would be suitable for office, for showroom, for warehouse, for biotech, for a number of different uses. And the building can also be repurposed over time to adjust to market demand. So just because it's an office or a warehouse today doesn't mean that couldn't be utilized as an office later on. So you've got that flexibility. And also there's the size of this type of building produces very efficient lease allocation. It's easily divided into very leasable spaces, 10,000, 10,000, 5,000 square foot spaces. So it's looking at the market. This type of building is presumed to be needed in this market and a good fit for this location.
So you're saying it ran out right away then, huh?
That's, we did a market analysis, and that was the outcome of that, yes.
This is a two-story building.
They're the type of building where you could have it as an open span. If you wanted to use it as a warehouse and have higher ceilings, you could do it that way, or you could put a mezzanine in it and have office space. So you could treat it either way.
It's about 40 feet in height.
And Scott, one of the things that, or maybe you're going to speak to it a little bit later, is the shoreline code in this S8 area, because that has some real, I think, restrictions or the need to get variances for office space. Now, maybe I'm under a different concept.
The consultants that we have, they said that this use would be appropriate with that. Zoning, and I've also visited with the city and discussed this idea with them. They said that this use, they could see this use on that property.
I'm saying S8 allows you to do that, but the shoreline master program does not, and I think you'd have to get a variance for office spaces. I'd like for you to follow up.
I think you're right, because I remember,
I haven't dealt with this issue in S8. That's an issue that we need a little clarity around, because when you look at my recollection of the shoreline code is water dependency, water related, and then water enjoyment.
That's really a mud puddle. It's not really a water.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
I have more water in my backyard.
No, but you do.
I disagree with you on that. I think it's a jewel for the waterway. It can be utilized.
All I'm saying is this is shoreline, whether we like it or not, whether you call it a mud flat or whatever, it's shoreline. And so I'm just saying, let's be really clear before we mislead it.
That's what the letter of the law says.
There's a difference in what they did on the west side and the east side of the Foss. So I think
it's the same zoning, though. S8 is the same zoning as what's on the other side.
So I'm sorry I didn't have a slide for showing the zoning, but I do have a sheet here. If you can see that this line here that parallels around the waterfront, on the waterfront side of that, that's the S8 zoning. Up above that, that's all M2, the industrial zoning. So it's just on the waterfront that you have the S8 zoning.
First 100 or 200 feet.
And inside that S8 zoning, you still have shoreline, and it's subject to a different requirement. That's all I'm saying, is based upon my experience on the Foss.
Well, we can check that all out.
Yeah, we can check it out.
And I have gone to the city just to make sure that, you know, we were going down a path that would work, and I didn't get any, I didn't hear any major roadblocks.
You know what Martinex zoning is, the Martinex property?
I'm not sure that's.
SA.
It's SA.
But I think the waterfront part is SA, but I think there's still some M2 on, away from the waterfront.
We'll get a zoning map, so, and then we'll also dig into the SA restrictions so that we understand.
It's a shoreline that, see.
Yeah, shoreline issue.
That shoreline issue is within 200 feet of that shoreline.
And I.
There are certain requirements that are, regardless of S8 or M2 or whatever.
We'll work with the Foss Waterway Development Authority in the city.
That also then gets you into the concept, and I like the idea that public access was at least identified, because that's where that public access issue comes in.
Exactly, and this next slide shows that this is an artist's conceptual drawing of what multiple-use type buildings might look like on the site. And note that, note along the front, you'll see the boardwalk along the waterfront to provide public access as required in the S8 zoning. So now I'd like to go to the south side of the Wheeler Osgood property. This property includes two parcels outlined in red, and it has four different buildings on that parcel. As background, the South Wheeler Osgood property was purchased by the port in 2006 for a purchase price of, a total purchase price of the two parcels of $3,400,000. The total area is about 4.42 acres. The port calls this Port Parcel 92. The four buildings are, four buildings, as I mentioned, are located on this building. Two buildings are vacant and waiting to be demolished. The estimated demolition cost for those two buildings is $650,000. Sound Lumber leases a small warehouse, actually, I'm calling it a warehouse, it's a metal building. It's 13,500 square feet on a month-to-month term, and it produces about $3,900 a month rent. The fourth building is leased to Urban Accessories. And the estimated demolition costs, and these are conservative. We haven't gone in there and done a total building assessment on all these, but from experience, I think these are conservative numbers. The total demolition cost for all four buildings is $1,550,000. This slide.
And what buildings are tearing down again?
Well, this slide here, perfect segue to that. This slide here, that the two buildings that are boarded up for demolition.
B&amp;A?
They're out, yes, they're outlined in yellow. The white roof building directly below the arrow, that's the building that I mentioned is leased to Sound Lumber on a month-to-month lease. These are pictures of the two buildings that are boarded up for demolition. Our security people, they've got to keep a close eye on these properties to keep trespassers and whatnot out of there. They're getting to be a focus.
So the 1.6 million is for all four, not just for the two?
Correct.
The 650, right, is for the two.
Yeah, the 650 is for the two that are boarded up.
Oh, I'm sorry, okay.
Can we go back to this slide? What are the, on that plot, on, can we go back one more? So you're going to tear down Building A and Building B.
Right, the two outlined in yellow.
Yeah, what other buildings are you going to tear down?
Well, the two that are boarded up right now and vacant are Building A and B, outlined in yellow.
Yeah.
We're discussing the other buildings, as I understand.
The building with the white roof, that's leased, currently leased on a month-to-month lease to Sound Lumber. And then the fourth building is Urban Accessories. So again, that's one of the boarded-up buildings, and here's the second boarded-up building. As I've mentioned, they're becoming a nuisance property.
Scott, just one question. Prior use on this property, especially the area where the trees are, what was that? Not our property, but.
Yeah, that's B and own property. I'm going to show you that. So that hasn't been used for many years. The B and owned the property. There used to be, along the south side of, of that picture, there's a rail line, current rail line. They use that to switch over when they're working, the rail yard across the street. So they use that to switch the locomotive back and forth. But that, there used to be a bridge going across the Foss, and that went through that area.
It was 15th Street.
15th Street Bridge, it used to go just like this, because they used to drive on it.
That was a long time ago, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. On the two buildings that's going to be coming down that we looked at, how about environmental concerns with regards to, you know, sometimes we end up, the demolition of a building stirs up something we don't want to find.
And we've, on those two buildings, we've gone through, we actually had them identified as a project, and they've gone through and they've assessed the buildings. And that's where that $650,000 number came from. So they've gone through, they have a pretty good understanding what it would cost to demo those buildings, and that's that estimate.
So we did a survey for asbestos.
Okay.
We suffered, yeah.
So to talk about the fourth building where Urban Accessories is located, that's about 22,000 square feet. It's on a month-to-month lease for about $7,800 a month. This building was constructed in 1945 and requires considerable repairs and improvements to keep it operational. The property is covered, the land has a considerable dust and slag on it. And the location of this building impacts the development opportunities for the remainder of the property. Here's some.
Scott, real quick, with regards to that, do you have an idea how many people they employ there?
The last number I heard is that there's about 46 people working there.
50.
You might be adding excise tax and whatnot in there, but.
Probably the leasehold excise tax. Leasehold excise tax. Leasehold excise tax. And you would know that.
If you want me to start paying $7,800.
Don't count on other people.
Sounds better, right?
The, and our invoices, they have their rent amount, they have the excise amount, they have utilities and different things broken down. So sometimes the totals are different than the rent. The, here's a picture of the Urban Accessories building. Here's another picture of that building. And here's a close-up of one of the uprights showing some of the deferred maintenance in that building. I want to go to.
If you run those steel girders all the way up, you'd be better off.
Would. The, we were talking about the BN property, and the BN property owns the property surrounding the port's property on the south side of the Wheeler Osgood. So in fact, the port doesn't have water access on the south side of the Wheeler Osgood. You see the BN, it has, it owns half of the Wheeler Osgood waterway. And then on the Foss side, where there are trees that we were talking about, that's where the bridge went across the Foss. And then on the lower or south side of this photo, that's the active rail line. Now, there's information on the BN property. The BN has indicated they're willing to sell that property. It's involved in the Foss Waterway environmental cleanup area. Acquisition of this property will require considerable environmental review. Acquisition of the BN property is needed for any water-related uses.
Scott, you mentioned it's listed for sale. Is there a listing price?
And it's not, when I say it's listed for sale, what, they do it a little bit differently than we're used to. You know, they don't typically list it with a broker and put it on Commercial Brokers Association. They have a broker that represents them as a consultant for all of their properties that they're willing to sell in the region. And that person, my understanding is that it's available for about $725,000.
How about the environmental cleanup after that?
They're being a little bit close-vested on information and what they have. At this point, they said they wouldn't provide any information until there was a purchase and sale agreement and.
My goodness, on the environmental side, $700,000, would even cover the contingency.
You might be right there. And, but I also wanted to point out, that the acquisition of the BN property is needed for any waterfront or any water use on that south side of the Wheeler-Osgood. That could be such as relocation of marine floats, or it could be for public access. So at this point, the port does not own, I want to make it clear, we do not own any water access on the south side. But now I'd like to introduce Rob.
So if you bought that, you'd have no return on the investment.
Well, we have a return on the investment from the land side. The land is actually our rentable asset, but from the commission has pointed out interest on waterfront activities such as public access, and then also we're looking for a future home for marine floats. So that would require
whatever the real estate issue turns out to be that's usable has to cover the cost of redeveloping the environmental aspect of the waterway also. So it's all one cost.
And that's a good segue, because I'd like to introduce Rob to update you on the environmental issues related to this property.
Just one quick question. What's the acreage?
The acreage of the BN property? It's just about excluding the railroad, the rail line, and excluding the submerged land. It's just under 2 acres.
Two?
Two.
Environmental.
So the BNSF is a party to the consent decree for the Theophos cleanup. That cleanup, the construction remedial action work was done, but it's something that we need to understand before we purchase any property. So we'll have to do our due diligence. And so we have a consultant lined up to do the phase one. That would include a technical review of existing publicly available reports from the BNSF property. We don't have those yet. We'll have to review the Theophos cleanup. There's an extensive amount of documents available for that over at CHB's offices. And we'll have to do a site inspection to determine the current property conditions, and then they'll prepare us a memorandum. So it's a typical phase one, but more expensive than a typical phase one because of all the environmental history that's gone on at the site. So our cost estimate for that is $22,000. That will undoubtedly lead to a phase two, which would probably be some sampling and some other work. And I don't know the scope of that. I can't tell you the scope of that until phase one's completed. But my estimate is somewhere between $50,000 and $100,000 would be needed to be invested to complete the due diligence on the BNSF property. I have looked at some of the historical documents from the Theophos cleanup. So this shows the property overlays the some of the construction remedial action construction work that was done in the Wheeler-Osgood and a little bit into the Theophos. So there is an environmental cap in the Wheeler-Osgood, and there's some slope rehabilitation work that's been done, and the EPA and the city do sampling. I think they've done the 10 years of sampling. We have to dig into the findings of those as far as due diligence.
Unlike, right along the Floss, they have those nice maps showing what was done to clean it up and the history of the cleanup. Yeah. And they actually kind of have part of this comparing this with the end of the Floss. And unlike where Waterway Park's going to be in the end of the Floss, where there's like a total cap, as I understand it, and it's really, really difficult to penetrate, to put in a, any kind of a pier or anything of that sort. Since they just did a sand cap, and I know you'd have to study this over, kind of in the middle, and with no action with a lot of it, it just sloped it. My unscientific, unknowledgeable perception is that perhaps the ability to put in piers would be different, perhaps the ability to access the water through with watercraft or anything would be different. Is that correct in general? Or?
Yeah, any kind of work that you do putting in piers.
Right.
Can do it, but you have to work with the EPA to right. make sure it's done appropriately so that the cap stays intact, that you're not disturbing the cap.
So it looks like a lot of the waterway close to the shore is uncapped at all. So
yeah.
That would be favorable in terms of putting in piers, I think. Anyway. Yeah. Okay.
The other thing, Rob, I would suggest to you is whoever you hire as a consultant, Mary Henley at the City of Tacoma, will be able to tell you a lot about these, what what happened in and around this property. There is a monitoring well on the property itself.
Okay.
I was out there, and Urban Accessories was very kind to let me, I actually walked this whole property, and Charles pointed out there's a monitoring well on the property. And so the good news from the environmental perspective that I have on this property is it's been studied. Source control has been a big issue on this waterway for a long time. I can't guarantee that it's all working, but the reality is, let's verify. It's where I'm at. Let's verify that we know what we think is true is true. And so, anyway.
And I was speaking to Mary last week about sharing information on the thing.
She's very good, and she's very knowledgeable. And the other thing I find interesting about this particular site, when you actually look at the treat area, if I'm reading this right, the yellow was that actually dredged, or is that natural recovery?
That light yellow is natural recovery.
That's what I thought, because that tells me that was pretty clean. For natural recovery to actually be allowed, it had to have been pretty clean. So, I mean, I really don't know anything about the uplands. But and the other idea is that when you look at a lot of the caps that we've done around our shoreline here throughout Commencement Bay, you know, there's ways that you can work for a redevelopment program. It might be a little more expensive, but it can't happen. Anyway, I think you're on the right track.
I do too.
So moving forward, development opportunities. There's many opportunities for this property. We feel the following are likely options considering the condition of the buildings, the zoning, and the cost of development for this property. But we've identified three possible scenarios. First one involves the demolition of the usable buildings. And we know that at least two of those buildings are not usable now. We'll have to go look at the other two and make a determination there. And lease the land for short-term use until a long-term plan is determined. So that's kind of continuing down our same path with the demolition taking place of those two buildings. Second option is to surplus and sell the property with a specific use restrictions, which could include criteria such as providing marine floats, a long-term lease, and exploring options with Urban Accessories. So just because we sell the property doesn't mean that we necessarily lose total control of it. We can put in those requirements, and we have had interest from different developers that they would consider working with both Marine Floats and Urban Accessories and consider purchasing the BN as part of the package. So those are all things that we could work towards. The third option would be demolition of the usable buildings, purchase the BN property, and initiate an RFP for a long-term lease with specific development requirements. So the big difference between the second option and the third option is we're talking about selling the property versus doing a long-term lease. In my discussions with the developers, I think their interest in a long-term lease is going to be much less than if they were able to buy the property and control their own destiny that way. But that is an option. So looking at those three as likely candidates, just asked our finance department to put together just a basic table showing the different financial scenarios of those three. If you look at the top line going across, the book value, of course, on all three options is the same. Our book value is a little over $2,500,000. The project cost for the first scenario and this third scenario, which include the demolition, which is the demolition of the buildings, is $1.6 million. Going down to the middle, the five-year cash flow, the scenario number two of selling the surplus and the property and selling it, that definitely is the best scenario on a cash flow basis. The other two, because of the demolition costs, there's considerably outflow of cash flow. And then on the balance sheet, the write-off, those are writing off the building values on scenario one and three. And on the second scenario, a little bit less than that, and that's the difference between our basis in the property and the anticipated purchase price. So that would be a loss. That's the difference there.
That's the scenario two.
Yes. And then looking at a net present value based on 10% on a five-year return, you can see that again.
They're all bad.
They're, none of them look great.
Great.
But.
Great. That's decent.
Scenario number two does, is definitely a better picture than the other two. But remember that that is caused by, it's because of the high price that we had when we purchased that property. So we're having to write that off. That's the loss that we're taking on that. The high price that we paid when we purchased the property. And getting somebody else to come in and buy the property, take over the responsibility of demolishing that land, or those buildings, and also dealing with cleanup issues and other things. The problem was when we purchased the property for that.
That was in 2006?
Yes.
Was anybody here then?
Two of you were.
Yes, yes.
Dick, why'd you do that?
So it's,
as they say, at the time.
At the time, that's right.
Thing to do.
So it's a paper loss, but, you know, from a cash flow basis. And I'll also point out that on that sale price, that's showing an anticipated price of $2 million. And then there's no reinvestment of that $2 million. It's just sitting there for that five-year term and not collecting interest or anything. So this is a very conservative.
That could be a bad assumption also, because we have a lot of financial opportunities and,
oh, yes,
and obligations we have to meet.
Correct. It's always nice to have cash, and we have.
So we get $2 million in our pocket versus giving money away versus spending money.
But I just wanted to show that in this scenario, or this financial table, that those opportunities aren't reflected there.
But on, if I could, on scenario three, just so I'm clear, because project costs, that's cut in half if you only do the two buildings. Am I correct?
Correct.
That's demolition cost, right?
Yeah, $650. Because I have a tendency to view your net book value as sunk costs. Mm-hmm. Pay for it. It's not going to drive the decision totally.
The book value is the same.
Yeah. I mean, under either scenario, it's just sunk.
If we decided to demo the two buildings and leave the other two, there may be some added maintenance costs. There's
increased maintenance, and actually the rents would be a little bit less than what we're assuming. The rents there are moving on the market. But basically, you're right that the project cost of it,
it's going to be less.
I think the property is really too valuable to the community to think of selling it. It gives us a lot more flexibility in terms of public use, public access, moving a tenant from one place to the other, putting up a port office building, making, you know, I mean, this is right across from the downtown city corridor, and the Foss waterways there with all its improvement and use now. So I don't think we could even think about selling it. I prefer that we either go with scenario one, or actually I prefer scenario three, and explore the purchase of the NSF property. As we look at an overall plan that includes public use, public access, you know, manufacturing, warehouse, office, whatever the combination is, but it's, I don't think we should consider surplusing or selling.
Scott, the other thing, I guess one of the things I have a tendency to do, the south and the north as being integral to each other, whether that's true or not, I think that is an idea that we're going to go out for an RFP, because we've got a tenant sitting in the north part of the parcel, as well as, you know, the real tenant on the south is Urban Accessories. So we've got two tenants that we're thinking about and have to think about, and that's why I'm thinking that if we do any kind of an RFP, I want to make certain we're clear about this issue of lease versus sell. That's very important, I think, for when you go out and ask for the development community to invest. The other piece is that there has to be some sensitivity as we go through this process to the priorities of use. And for me, I always think of it as water dependent. And I feel that that's one of the real issues in front of us here is that really a priority of this commission, is to get it water dependent or water related? And water enjoyment is kind of low on my priority list. So I'm just saying, I don't want to see us go out and issue an RFP until we're clear about, I'd like to see a bigger vision that encompasses the north as well as the south on an RFP. And I guess maybe I need to ask you, what are you anticipating on an RFP? And what do you need so that we aren't misleading either our existing tenants or we're clear to the development?
I'd like to add to that too. I'm not a water dependent guy. I have to take an extreme position because everybody else is. I look at the P&L, and the only thing we offer that even comes close to looking good is the city. So I think no matter which direction we go in, the city likes it, well, they can buy the property. I think we have better use for our money to provide much more income for everyone. You can't buy down your debt without profit. You can't invest more money without profit. And I'm interested in boosting our profits and our long-term financial stability. So I'd be interested in a scenario that essentially does that. I don't care which way it goes. But I'd rather have my capital cost in my pocket than get nothing for it. And again, I don't care what to do with it. I don't see that as a critical waterway. You know, you show it nice, it's got water in it today, but I've seen we don't have a lot of water from time to time too. It looks like a mud puddle. my condolences to John, but it looks like a mud puddle when I look out on Moss Avenue.
I spent a lot of time in that mud puddle.
I know.
I like to play in mud, I guess.
It's very low draft.
Yes.
But if it's a good deal, then people need to have a return. And the only option you show here is a return is option two at this stage. And you show that as negative because you didn't do anything with that $2 million you got.
If I could real quickly, one of the things, and I hear both everybody talking, you mentioned something, if we were to decide to surplus this, that you could do so with specific use restrictions. And I'd like to see what that would look like in the sense of, you know, I do agree that we need to have some kind of return with regard, we're talking, you mentioned, you know, port offices that we're going to have to look at eventually. If we could maybe have a win-win situation where we could restrict and have certain things put in this that a potential buyer would be interested in and still serve the purposes that we were thinking about, that I think could work out.
And that's the idea that I've been working towards. I think if we could use other people's money to accomplish our goals, that's a nice idea.
I like that.
And we've had discussion with a few developers that are willing to do exactly that, or at least on the surface they said they were. They've looked at the property, they like the property, they like the location, they understand that the BN property, they also understand the current uses of the property, and look at the urban accessories, and they're willing to work with them and see what options they can come up with.
Because we could always guarantee those up front.
Well,
the protection for our tenants.
We, subject to it penciling out.
Yeah,
you know,
it's got penciled out.
If it's going to work, it has to work for everybody. But currently, it's obvious that the current rent for that building wouldn't support a modern building, an upgraded building, or a new building. Something would have to change there. So, but we have developers that are willing to look at that and explore those options, and we just need, we need the ability to go out there and start talking to them.
Pat, I have a couple of other questions, if I could. Number one, I'm just interested and think we should be aware of what's being planned just south of these properties, which is on the Martinet property that's been recently sold. So while that's not in part of your presentation, it influences what goes on in both of those areas. Yeah. The other thing,
and the transportation piece through there,
right,
too.
Yeah. The other thing I'm really interested in the plan or the proposal that we have for the north side of the Wheeler Osgood, the property that currently is owned by the port, what are the returns on investment that you've looked at as far as that particular, those types of buildings are concerned over a 5 and 10 and 15 year period? That's what's of interest to me when we consider whether we sell or whether we sell to developers or we keep. I mean, we're looking at economic development in the Tacoma area as our purpose as we move forward as the Port of Tacoma. So I think that we need to be really aware of what those returns are potentially. And then I'd like to, I mean, I suspect some of the developers who've been looking at this property might be sitting here in the audience, or if you could just explain to us some of the suggestions that have been brought forth. Maybe they'd like to speak, or maybe you'd like to tell us some of the suggestions that have been brought forth for the use of the south Wheeler Austin property.
For the use of the south, the developers that we've talked to, they would go in and they would be willing to purchase, or at least try to negotiate with the BN for purchasing that property. And if they were successful, they would definitely look at working with Marine Floats to provide them a long-term lease and home on the south side. They would also be willing to work with Urban Accessories and see what could be done there on the possibility of either upgrading that building and or building a new building that would meet their needs. And then the remainder of the property would be utilized for a small warehouse. The estimate was about a 75,000 square foot warehouse. And so that was basically, I've talked to a few different developers. And
so private developers have looked at it, and their decision would be dependent upon including the BNSF property as part of the whole?
I've indicated that for my, of course, everything's subject to commission approval, but I've indicated that we would be very interested in seeing a package where that the BN property was included to provide that water access, and to also provide possibly a long-term lease for Marine Floats. So we put that out as a primary criteria that they should work with if possible.
But if I could just comment on that, I don't know who you're talking to, and it sounds like intentions are good. My concern always is if we turn it over to a private developer, public use and access is going to take a minimal consideration. It's always going to be profit driven, and I don't think it's appropriate to put big warehouses tying up, locking in waterfront land. We've got a customer that can use the water. Maybe have others that can use the water. We certainly have people recreationally that can. But this location, the former mouth of the Puyallup River, is where the Port of Tacoma makes a statement to the city. Now you're entering the port, but there are several aspects and facets of the port, including public use and access. So I hate to see us lock up just with a sidewalk around it. Lock up prime waterfront land. And that's my skepticism about a developer, not having talked to any of them, but I think the public use and access might be for that.
Well, remember, we have the S2 zoning around there that requires that promenade or boardwalk that goes around the waterfront. So that's a requirement.
Well, following John's comment, did they indicate what they're going to do with the railroad property?
This
part right here? Where the trees are?
Oh, the trees? They'd have to determine how much of that is usable and how much isn't usable.
So they haven't indicated whether they're going to cut them all down or whether they're going to leave them there?
No, that they haven't spent any money on reviewing the property. They would have, normally they would have a 6 to 9 months or a due diligence period to look at all that and then come back with a plan. And then the purchase and sale would be also approved by the commission at that point. So just by the fact that we put it up for surplus and invite the business opportunity to come in and make suggestions or offers or plans, that doesn't preclude the commission from then approving what plan they like and having input on it.
Are there any folks in the audience that would like to comment on the topic we're talking about at this stage? If not? Okay, go ahead. Please step up to the podium and introduce yourself.
Here for, you know, we moved down here to buy the property, and that's a whole nother story. But I feel like Scott's mentioning that these developers, I don't know why the port wouldn't sell it to us, why they want a developer. And we spoke with the developer, which I believe the real estate person is a friend of yours. That's what he said. He was a friend of yours. Anyway, that doesn't matter. But I mean, it wouldn't be workable for us the way they would, you know, the rent would be $40,000 a month, and they would rebuild, they'd make a building and a shell and tear everything down. I mean, that's not, we moved down here to purchase the property, and then the port ended up with it, and that's the whole other story, but I don't know why the port wouldn't sell it to us. Why you need a developer to come in when we have, you know, 50 employees, reps all over the country, we're a good viable business in the community. I mean, I feel like you owe it to, you know, the workers and the people that put money back into the.
Can I respond to that?
Yeah. Yes. Well, just, I'd like for you to finish your comments.
Well, that's kind of, I mean, I just.
Okay. Thank you.
Because we do want to purchase, we made it very clear we wanted to purchase the property over and over. And we, you know, we beautify things. We put old metal into the, you know, we make it into gorgeous things. We recycle all that stuff. So, and for you to show that little ugly picture of like we're not taking care of the building when we've had it for 17 years and or 18 years and we've haven't gotten a penny from the port and we've always done everything. And there were viable businesses right there, but you guys closed them down, so now they look awful.
Thank you.
Okay, that's it. I just had to say that.
I appreciate it.
Okay, go ahead.
Scott?
So as clarification, if when the port goes to a surplus action, we make a public announcement, and then anybody that's interested in purchasing the property is able to respond to that. And any plan that comes in will be looked at. And it would not only looked at on a financial merit, but it's also looked at as how's it fit into the community, how does it fit into the port, and on the number of jobs that it supports. So having a business down there that's, that supports 50 jobs, that's very important to the commission and the port, and that would definitely be considered. So that the intent is that we have to put it up for surplus to even allow those types of options and plans to come in where the commission could then review them.
No, and I know that, yeah.
So are you,
thank you. Yes, go ahead.
Are you saying that no developers are interested in developing plans for a long-term lease and that we'd have to sell it with use restrictions in order to get a developer to give us a plan?
I always tell developers that the port's preference is a long-term lease.
Right.
And the response I get is that that would really soften or minimize their interest in the property. That doesn't mean that if we put an RFP out there with those types of conditions and terms that we wouldn't get somebody. But just the initial response from the developers, the development community, and the brokerage community is that there would be a much less interest in leasing the property.
I guess I'm not out to please them. I think that's an important piece of the vision for the future of the Port of Tacoma, and I'd like us to retain control of it. So.
I would like to point out that this is kind of we've got kind of a domino chain here. We've talked about these properties for 2 years on the north side of the Wheeler Osgood, as represented in the blue area there. That property, we've identified that we would like to do an RFP on that, and I'm the highest and best use type guy. I like financial returns, and that property is
otherwise why be in business
is ready to put out to the market. And you know, this, we're in a very good business cycle right now. We don't know how long that cycle is going to last, but it's ripe for this type of development. The one thing that in the past when we've talked about it has been that our concern for marine floats, that they've been there for 30 years, and as Wendell mentioned, that they've looked all around the Sound and they can't find another place as well suited for this business as this location. So, and we're limited, right? We haven't looked around the Sound, but we've definitely looked in our backyard, and the south side of the Wheeler Osgood is a very viable home for that business. So we've been trying to put together a solution where we could hopefully take care of marine floats on the south side, meet the commission requirements for taking care of that. And we'd like to find a solution for urban accessories. They've been there a long time and they support a lot of people. But and in doing so, then we open up the north side for that development. And we've talked about even, that could even be the future home of an admin building. So there's a lot of things that could happen there.
Just a clarification question on that. Did you say you had put the RFP out or that it was ready to go out?
We've, about a year ago, we were close to putting it out, so it's substantially complete. It needs to be updated, but I could get it out fairly quickly.
The nice thing about getting RFP out, it keeps me know what we're talking about.
And that's for the north side.
We're just sitting around the table.
And so kind of one of my questions, a follow-up on that, is if anybody's interested in the development on the north side of the Wheeler Osgood, are those the same parties that would be interested in the south side?
And I believe the answer is yes.
I don't know.
I believe the answer would be yes.
The easiest way to do it is put the RFP out and find out.
And that's been my problem is we talk about south versus north. We talk about impacts in the north relative to marine floats. The reality is they're all interconnected. I think the stronger package is if we get control over the BN property, now we've assembled something that is dynamic, really dynamic. And the reality then becomes one of, if you have more of a development concept on the north and south being integrated, then you could probably do some things for these businesses that we're concerned about in a different way. That's all I'm saying, is I have a tendency to view this, north and south should be integrated. Public access issues become, transportation issues become clearer. I mean, there's a whole host of benefits, I think, that we should, if we're gonna go out to the market, I think we ought to talk about some alternatives, sale versus lease. If that's what we need to find out in terms of the financial piece, we should be clear about that.
I think.
You know what I'm saying?
I think it should be all one piece.
I do too.
And just get an RFP, I get tired of sitting around tables, flapping my jaws, talking about nothing because we have no facts. I think we need to know what it's gonna cost us, and I think we need to have some realism around development or leasing it, because last time I looked at our P&L, we didn't have that kind of money. We have huge financial obligations. And if we're going to invest, we need to have a return on that investment. Otherwise, we're not gonna be able to meet our other obligations. So it can't be, I'm not into giveaway programs, because everybody wants to give them something. I'm not into that, but that's just philosophical. I think we need to see what that is. And I like the idea of lease building with restrictions, because it's not using our money, because our capital's kind of tied up, because we have other lands we want to develop.
So I
look at both sides.
I like moving forward with our environmental assessment, moving forward with exploring acquiring the property from Burlington Northern. And I don't have a problem with an RFP as long as it's clear that we may very well not surplus and sell it. We may be looking at other proposals.
One of the things we always have is that once we send out an RFP, we have the ability to look at it and say it doesn't suit our needs. You know, this is.
But Dick, I think it's important to the development community, because if we're hard and fast on leases, we should say that. I mean, because the worst thing we can do is mislead the development community that we're not willing to even consider the sale.
But at the same time, if we put in there, like what Scott had mentioned and stuff, that this is how we want to view this property. In other words, we want to see this kind of a development on the property, and nothing comes in close to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, then we can always reject the offers, but the reality, I'm assuming what we're going to be wanting to look at here from a financial perspective is the ability to use somebody else's money. Yeah. Why do we, you know what I'm saying? Because that is pretty clear to me.
Why don't we do it the simple way? Why don't we just create an RFP, bring it back to the commission, and let's tear it up?
We could do that too.
So we're all on board. So it's always easy to be on board after the fact. Let's get on board ahead of the fact.
No, that's exactly where we're coming from.
Yeah. Well, but the rubber's going to meet the road if we have an agenda item that includes surplus for purposes of sale. And some of us might say, no, I'm not there. You know,
well, all we're going to do is repeat. Let's go back to that. We're just going to review the RFP.
Could I ask a clarification of Carolyn? Can we issue an RFP that says, we'd be willing to consider a sale, or we're willing to consider a lease? Is that going to violate what otherwise we normally have to do for the surplusing of property?
As a legal matter, that would not violate any kind of surplusing requirement. It's just a policy decision as folks around the table.
Because I don't believe we can answer any of these questions until we get information, hard information, from the development community to say, we prefer this. And here's the scenario. And I find it very interesting. We really have three different parcels, because when you start talking about an M2 designation, that's a difference in my book, different than an S8. and the shoreline issues that we deal with. So I, there could be a combination here that might be very interesting. So I, Don, I like your idea.
Let's do it.
Get an RFP, get something developed.
Write up an RFP, but don't send it out. Bring it back.
Bring it back to us.
Ahead of time so we can review it, and then we can sit down, see the pluses and minuses, and then, we're all in the same boat.
So as clarification, I've always assumed it would be two RFPs, one for the north side, one for the south side. Now we're talking about one RFP.
One RFP. That's been my issue all along.
Because they're going to come back and tell us both what they look at on the south and the north side.
Well, listen, we got customers on both the north and the south. Why not put them together? That way, we've got some degree of certainty going forward. That's all.
And I explained the view that I received from developers is you've got basically two different types, two different classes of developers that are looking at these two properties, the north and the south. A property that's 15 acres in size, that's
small.
That's going to attract some of the larger developers. You know, even Prologis that indicated, you know, which we've worked with on parcel 14, they've indicated they would be interested in that type or that size of development. However, on the south side, the small 4.5 acre parcel, that attracts a different type of developer that's focused on smaller places and whatnot. And the large developers, they want land that's already entitled. They want land that's ready to go. Most cases, they're not going to go out and work on a piece of property for 2 years and deal with, you know, acquiring a BN property and deal with cleanup issues and deal with relocating tenants to get their development. They've got a fairly quick timetable. They want to get in there, they want to do their design, they want to do their permittings, and they want to move on. And I think by tying the two together, we're going to preclude a lot of interest that we otherwise would have had on the north side. So I just want to point that out.
I accept the commentary of an expert, and we always have the right to turn it down.
Well, I think we're limiting ourselves by confining our vision to what developers are going to come up with. And I look at other cities that have waterfront areas. Maybe we ought to be talking to urban planners at the University of Washington, get some other expertise other than just a development. Somebody that Vancouver, Canada, you know, what they've done with parts of their waterfront, et cetera. Someone that can give us a vision that is beyond what a developer would come up with.
I don't agree with that at all, because that usually results in I'm paying and getting no returns.
Well,
it is. It's exactly what it is.
I think
I'm writing the
too
check.
Too broad, John. Too general.
If it's a good business deal, people will pay money for it. I think that it's going to be a gift, and we can't afford gifts. And
the center waterfront area, though.
But then let them bring a check.
Let the John do.
Yeah, just a thought as I'm listening to the conversation, and maybe taking an alternative approach to what you're suggesting, Scott, which is putting an RFP out for the whole and encouraging partnerships where it makes sense. To your point about there may be strengths of one developer on the north end versus south, but nothing precludes them from coming together in a joint presentation to say, here's how we develop this in a partnership. The only other thing I would add is one of the complexities of going out with an RFP today is we don't have ownership of the BM property today. And I know that there's expressed interest in pursuing that, so that we can do that. The question I ask myself is, do we wait until we have certainty about our ownership or not there, or do we go? Because that's a piece of the puzzle, or potentially a piece of the puzzle.
What's the time? What do you think the timeline?
I don't know.
Relative to, because what I perceive is well, first of all, you're dealing with the railroad, so timelines is real interesting. Right. But I would view the environmental review probably would be the longest thing that would take.
And so the other question, of course, is can you put an option down?
Or longer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just put an option down. Do it that way.
Because I prefer,
and then you look at it.
My experience would tell me is you're always better off if you bring more certainty to the RFP process.
Oh, yeah.
Always. Right. Always. And having that BN property, as Clara said, an option or something, brings more certainty, I think, in terms of where I think this project could go.
So, Carolyn, from a legal standpoint, if we had an option on that property and we were going through our due diligence, can we legally include that option in our RFP?
Yeah, you'd have to make it very clear, obviously, for the
development
community.
that might be a way in which we can move things along.
Well, that way you know the total financial obligation also.
Yeah, right, exactly right. So, I mean, to me, that would be the best package we could put out there. And Scott, my experience on this waterway is exactly, John, what you just alluded to, is the folks came together and different entities with different strengths, particularly someone that can deal with the environmental issues, because oftentimes the properties were remediated, not necessarily totally cleaned up, and banks didn't know what the heck it was all about. So always view it as a possibility of joint ventures.
Okay.
Okay. So I, yeah, to me, I've always felt that that's exactly where this would end up anyway.
So in terms of trying to summarize next steps, let me suggest that one next step would be our express interest in the BM property and pursuing that. Two, that we would come back to the commission in a public meeting, probably at a commission meeting, and get to you in advance an RFP that you could take a look at and then have discussion about that so that we can move that along. And then that we would begin our due diligence spending, starting with the $22,000 estimated, $22,000 to phase one environmental, and knowing that there may be more money spent to complete the due diligence on the BM property as part of our express interest in purchasing that property. That's what I see at the next.
Just one add-on, and I know I said it and it didn't go anywhere, but I don't want to confine our vision to what developers say. Why don't we go to the city of Tacoma, urban planning? They're, some of their planners, they undoubtedly have created visions of the Foss Waterway over time. Why don't we reach out to them? And
you can always do something like a public contest on visioning for
As long as they bring a check.
People have done that.
You know, they're not going to want to bring a check.
To get to where you're going, John,
can I just finish with that?
Yeah,
I mean, just to follow up on that. That is something that other property owners, cities,
have done.
And it's like not going out and selecting a particular one, but it's to say, hey, this is what we're working on. Yeah, we have a prize, whatever that might be, but we'd like to get from those people who do this all the time some ideas and bring it in.
I'm familiar with what you're talking about. I'm also familiar with, if you really want to get some ideas, the process that I'm familiar with is you provide a small stipend and you go through a pre-selection process and you kind of pre-qualify entities. That's another way to do it. My feeling, John, on where I think you're trying to go to is if we truly package this in such a way, I think we're going to get different ideas. I really do. I really am convinced of it, because there's a lot of dynamic that's going to happen here by putting these two parcels together and the assemblage. I think we'll get there. I never have a problem with trying to be clear about what the vision could be. The one thing I like about, though, is when you do an RFP targeted towards developers, you're going to get more reality relative to the financial piece to it. If we wanted to go through the visioning process, that's a whole nother matter.
Nobody brings any money to those.
Well, but I have a lot of empathy for what Clara's talking about in terms of the ability to say, what could this look like? What, because oftentimes we rush into the development mode without really saying, because I view this as a jewel. This is a jewel. And it's a beautiful piece of property, and it's an important piece of property to all of us, not just the port, it's our community. And so I feel, we ought to think about some of these issues. So, but I'm not necessarily opposed to, given the developer interest that I think will be out there, John, I think we'll get some good ideas. I really do. The other piece, if I could, because it relates to this parcel, and it's something I'd really like to advocate we have a conversation on, and that is I've always, since I've been a commissioner, I've had this perception about the port office building. It's outlived its useful life in a variety of ways, not the least of which the location is bad. and although beautiful location, but the reality is that when I look at this particular parcels, is it a point in time to where we, if we are going to go out for an RFP, and ports, I think, could be part of the office piece for Shoreline, an office building, if ports a part of it. And I'm reminded when I go up to the Port of Vancouver, British Columbia, and their office building on the waterfront, and how first class it is with public access. I mean, it's incredible to me. So when you were talking about visioning, I was thinking, oh my gosh, can we also think about some options relative to our office building? We need, you know, I have a perception, and I guess I'd like to check with my fellow commissioners here. I've not seen any numbers on it, but the reality is last time we approved a major outlay for the port admin building, it was kind of like it's got major problems. So the more clarity we give on potential uses is a pretty important topic.
I think we have to come back to reality just a little bit. I keep going back there, you know. How much money do we have? The office building probably lasts forever if you maintain it, just like this thing if you maintain it. Any new building will have a maintenance cost to it if you don't keep it up. We have yet decided on where, on whether or not we, because right now we're running and we don't need an office building. And as we say, we want to match the office building in downtown Seattle. We want to spend $20 million on an office building out of our own money. And what kind of a return does that provide? I think we have to have that. We have to treat it like it's our money to some extent. I don't mind I think you're right. We have to find another location for the Port of Tacoma. That might not justify a building.
I'm only putting that out there as just an observation that I have relative to, and by the way, I'm not assuming we're going to use our money. There's all sorts of programs out there, folks.
It all depends. Yeah. I agree. I would not have it.
We got,
yeah. I just want to say it's a good thing that we have 5 and 6 and 10 minds here so that we have many different opinions.
A couple of quick things is that, you know, I agree, Don, in the sense that we don't need an office building today, but we realize and know that
it's long term.
Yeah, it's long term. And 11th Street's going to be eventually vacated. That office building is going to be history.
Eventually.
And if we keep selling different properties, where are we going to go? We'll be at the whim of someone who owns the property. I like the idea of looking at something like this. And then if we do go, let's say in the future, and decide to sell this properties, I would like to see it dedicated to a future building so we don't set it aside or something like that. John, with regards to your urban, I would be shocked if someone from the city doesn't already have a vision of what they would like to see over there, including the Foss Waterway. Because, Don, remember on the Foss Waterway, we weren't just talking about one side, we were talking about every side.
Yes.
We've had several visions on this property already.
So, you know, I think if we reached out, we, you know, you could get some ideas.
There's no port city that has waterfront in a downtown that I've ever been to that I've said, wow, isn't that a great use of that waterfront land? There's a warehouse right there. So we got to expand our vision.
But let's not lose track that we purchased a lot of that property to make sure it stayed industrial.
Yeah, that's
to make
right.
sure it could grow jobs.
Not a hotel there.
So
I don't know what your intent was when you overpaid for the property, but all I know is I've only been here for 7 months. But so
I think it was an encroachment issue.
Well, there was a lot of issues at the time.
Regardless of what the motivation was, the reality is we have a key piece of property, and it's an underutilized asset, and we've got to be sensitive to existing tenants in terms of trying to accommodate those folks. I think that I still will come back to, John, I think you summarized it well, is that let's prepare an RFP and bring it back to this body so we can continue to think about this and give some direction to staff. Worst thing we can do for the development community is be unclear about our intentions. And then we'll, I think the quality of the proposals we get back will lack.
And I will add another suggested next step to build on what Commissioner McCarthy said. I don't see any harm in reaching out to the city to see what plans they might have. The Foss Waterway Development Authority might have some ideas. There's nothing lost in doing that in parallel to the RFP. So I think that's an easy thing to do.
And how about this? We're going to hold off. We're going to review the RFP before we do the research on the waterway itself, the environmental research. Because that's you can do that on your own.
But my suggestion is that we put the wheels in motion in terms of our expressed interest in the BN property and our environmental due diligence, our phase one, because we'll need to know that in more detail before we make a final decision about purchase.
I know what we're talking about.
Yeah, so we can move on that, and yeah, I think we've got, I think you've given us good feedback today as to what the next steps are, and expect that we'll come back with a draft RFP that you all can take a look at.
And you're going to pursue them with BN?
Yes, we will do that.
It's about as clear as the Wheeler Ogden waterway.
I'm going to put that container ship over there.
And I want to thank again Scott in particular. He's been working this project for
years.
For years, and I know it's been, it felt like fits and starts, and part of that is that there's a lot of moving pieces to this. So this is really helpful to move it forward.
But John, also, you know, when you really kind of kick back and look at what's been happening for our tenants to be on a 30-year month-to-month lease, we owe them also.
Yeah, some certainty.
Most definitely, you know what I'm saying? So there's a lot of sensitivity.
Yeah, I'm not one of those business way.
Are we almost done?
Yeah, I
just one thing I want to make sure that Rob knows, this is Husky territory. I just wanted to make sure.
All right.
Okay, with that summary, anything else for the good of the cause? I do appreciate everybody's attendance, by the way. This is an important topic. And I think we're going to get some direction here. And I appreciate John and Scott and Rob, your efforts as well. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
We are adjourned.